The critics are raving about many of this year's summer movies. Which have you seen? Summer movies used to be seen as big and flashy and fun, but not serious films, according to the critics. This summer, however, that may be changing. From Baby Driver to Wonder Woman, Dunkirk to Beguiled, the summer films of 2017 are getting great reviews and even some Oscar buzz. Yes, Hollywood is again giving us the traditional superhero, sci-fi, war, and romantic comedy. But even the rom-com, The Big Sick, is hailed as fresh and different. I'm Jennifer Rooks, today on Maine Calling, two people who make it their business to see just about any and all movies, share me to share the backstories of some of these blockbusters, explain what's trending and why, and offer insights into what these movies say about popular culture. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Superhero films and kid flicks seem poised to dominate this summer's box office. Wonder Woman is still pulling in big audiences, and the Spider-Man reboot is projected to surpass $100 million in ticket sales this weekend. Despicable Me 3 so far has not performed as well as Despicable Me 2, but guess which movie is at the top of this year's box office? It is not Guardians of the Galaxy or Wonder Woman, but Beauty and the Beast, which came out in March and so far has raked in over $500 million. Well, today we are going to talk about summer movies with two people who know a lot about them. On the line with us, Claire Kramer, a two-time Saturn Award winner who just finished directing her first feature documentary. And she can also currently be seen on Lifetime's The Wrong House, airing this summer. She is co-founder of Geek Nation website and on the advisory board of the Pasadena Film Festival. And Garen Daly is also with us. He is an award-winning film critic, programmer, and consultant. He is founder of the Boston Sci-Fi Film Festival. He's also the creative consultant for Evening Star Cinema in Brunswick. Of course, we'd like to hear from you. What's the best movie you've seen so far this summer? What's disappointed you? And what are you looking forward to? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to MaineCalling, talk@MaineCalling.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post the Maine Calling Facebook page. Welcome to Claire and Garen. Thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you, guys. Thanks, Jennifer.
Claire, I understand congratulations are in order. Your second Saturn Award. For those who don't know what it is, tell us what a Saturn Award is and what your award was.
Well, the Saturn Awards have they're a really fun awards show. They've been around forever, and they are kind of the juxtaposition to the Emmys or the Oscars. They don't take themselves too seriously. They focus more on genre material. And so, hence, both my Saturns have been for genre films. The first one was a film called Big Ass Spider, which was directed by Mike Mendez. And the second film was also Mike Mendez produced, and he was one of the directors. It was a conglomeration of 10 horror directors, and it was called Tales from Halloween, and it was done as a love letter to the horror genre. So it was a really special project to be a part of, and we're really thankful to win.
Well, congratulations. Let's talk about summer movies. Garen, so many critics are saying this is a great summer for movies. Do you agree?
Yes and no. The issue is that the business itself is down 8%. In terms of tickets, and it looks like the end of the summer is going to be better, but we've seen a lot of tanking.
What was expected to do well that didn't do well? What's tanking?
Tanking is King Arthur, Alien Covenant, Baywatch, Pirates of the Caribbean, The Mummy, Transformers.
That's right, because those are not the movies that are getting the great reviews, are they?
You know, but that, you know, it's the comic book movies and these sequels and reboots are normally critic, you know, that doesn't really have an impact. So this is becoming an issue for Hollywood, is that I think people are getting fatigue from sequels and reboots.
Okay. Claire, I want to talk about Wonder Woman. First movie in ages I could convince my entire family to see. We didn't have to break away from one another to either see the war movie or the romantic comedy that the other half of the family wouldn't see. A lot of attention in the press to the fact that there's a female director. It's made, more than $360 million. Is this movie as big a deal to you as it is to obviously so many of the people who are watching Hollywood?
Well, I think this movie is not only a big deal to me as someone who is a fan of films and of, you know, I don't have superhero exhaustion yet. So I can talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, Marvel, DC. I absolutely love what's out there right now. Wonder Woman, in my opinion, did not disappoint. Of course, Patty Jenkins directed. I think that it was amazing for her to get that deal to begin with, because, of course, she'd only directed one other movie, which was Monster in 2003, which obviously did very well. But having Patty at the helm, I think, was essential to the success of the storytelling. And what I loved was Wonder Woman didn't take itself too seriously, you know, and it really explored at the beginning of the movie Diana's origin story. It didn't jump straight into, I mean, of course, we saw the picture of her walking across the Louvre at the very top of the movie and getting the email from, you know, Bruce Wayne. But it immediately took us back and we really explored how the character developed and where that mythology came from. And to me, that was the front half of the movie. And it was extremely satisfying to see that done and done so well. And then, of course, we see her catapulted into World War I, which I really enjoyed that setting because so often if we're in wartime, it's World War II. So it was, in a way, refreshing to visit that time period and to have the characters unfold under those pretenses. I thought it was a huge, wonderful success and a success that DC needed, because DC has been kind of blowing it with their big superhero movies. And so to have Wonder Woman come in and open so strongly to 103 million and to have Patty, you know, take credit for that. And of course, Gal Gadot, who was amazing. Chris Pine, also amazing. To me, it was just a phenomenal movie. And I think it's wonderful and everyone should see it, male or female. And I think that, you know, men will appreciate what it does for the DC universe as much as women.
Garen, what did you think of Wonder Woman?
Well, I liked it. I didn't think it was the greatest movie that I'd seen. I'll tell you what I liked. I thought Gal was terrific. I thought the special effects were terrific. I thought the direction was solid. I love the fact that Chris Pine made fun of himself in the entire movie, playing like the ingenue, but on a male side. That was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed that. I think what I really enjoy, though, is the fact that this is the first film, a superhero film, that a female has directed that has not been tainted by what Hollywood, you know, kind of like discounts it. She's an excellent director, and she made an excellent film, and it really should open door for more film directors. We have to remember one thing. 52% of all the tickets sold at the box office are purchased by women, and Hollywood has done a very poor job of bringing women into the fold.
I was reading some Variety articles before the show today, and it always seems as though this is the same story, that people in Hollywood seem so surprised when a movie does well that appeals to women.
You know, here's something. I used to be, and I still am, someone that goes to trade screenings. And in trade screenings, these are for the industry, for the bookers that book films in other theaters. And when you come out of the theater, everyone says, oh, the film was just okay, wasn't that good. And the reason is they don't want to say it's a great film and then see it tanked. If it does well, then they can say, who knew?
Ah, so it's not that who knew a film would appeal to women, but just who knew in general it would be
who
a success.
Who knew in general? The industry is very conservative, very male, and they don't like to take chances. And that's going to be a downfall.
You Claire? Know, I agree that the percentage of female directors is not equal to the percentage of male directors. But from a female director perspective, I don't want to hear a movie talked about as like, oh, it had a woman director, so it did really well for having a woman director. No, I mean, Wonder Woman is blowing away the competition. It's arguably up, we'll see how Spider-Man does this weekend, but it, you know, was number one in the box office for a couple weeks. Like I said, open to $103 million. That's not, it's here nor there whether Patty Jenkins is a woman or not. The fact is, she's an artist who made an amazing movie. And I think the less focus we put on talking about the fact that it was a female director, and this movie was not made for women. Wonder Woman was made for comic book fans, okay? Don't be misled by anyone or anything. If this movie was geared towards only women, it would have had a different marketing campaign and a much different budget. This movie was made for the masses. So to talk about the fact that it was a female director and a female lead and you know, it was marketed towards females, that's misleading. And it's also, I think it does a disservice to Patty and Gal and the industry. That's just my opinion.
Unfortunately, though, I agree with you, but the industry is shaped like that, where, you know, they do look at whether it's a female or whatever, other than a white male director. And I do believe it's hurting the industry. I mean, there's the classic four quadrants that exists in Hollywood, where they can market film: male under 25, male over 25, female under 25, female over 25. And for years, it's been all male under 25. And that's three quarters of the other markets being not developed at all. And that's wrong. And I would want to see that they start making a wider breadth of movies. And I think that would be much better for the industry than just focusing in on comic book heroes.
Garen, you said that overall ticket sales are down 8% this summer. Does a movie, when you take, you mentioned, you know, Spider-Man coming out, we've got Wonder Woman. Is it the belief that people will only see so many movies of a certain genre and they're, you know, going to save their $15 for just one or just two?
It really depends on whether you're talking about the American domestic market or whether you're talking the global market, because the global market now comprises about 70% of the entire box office take. So you take something like Transformers, the new Transformers films. It did rather poorly in the United States, but it's done enough money to be able to say that it's going to make over $220 million in profit. So, you know, if you're talking about the U.S., I would say people are holding back, and they're not going to the movies as much as they used to. And that's something that has to be very concerning to Hollywood and to the exhibition industry, the movie theaters. But because there's such a strong China, Russia, India, China market out there, it's kind of big, you know, blowing that, making that problem not seem as severe, although there are indications that the Chinese market is starting to taper off.
Mm. Claire, how many people are listening to the buzz this summer, paying attention to what movies do well, and then waiting for them to come out over streaming, over iTunes or something else?
Well, you know, I think you always will have that. And you'll always have people that are going to go on recommendations such as Garen's, you know, and see movies that they are either word of mouth or through reviews that they find interesting. But by and large, I think that people, to me, this is a really exciting summer of releases because there's a clear differentiation between the big budget, you know, comic book movies, and there are a lot of indies out this summer, and that's what I find refreshing and exciting. And that's taking the model sort of that we were talking about that Hollywood has functioned under for several decades, and it's becoming a little bit antiquated because we are finding this mid-level release appeals to a different audience and is created for a different audience. So yes, people will always go by reviews. Yes, people will always go by marketing campaigns. That's why they're there. But by and large, I think that as a nation, we're ready to see more artistic pictures and pictures that touch more on the humanity side and not just the big budget superhero movies.
And when you're talking about those, are you talking about, for example, The Beguiled that's coming out soon?
Yes. The Beguiled is out, actually.
Oh, it's out.
Yes, this is a great movie. This is another female director, Sofia Coppola. And it is based on the book A Painted Devil. And actually, The Beguiled was first made as a pulp classic in 1971, starring Clint Eastwood. And what is so interesting is Sophia has taken that version of the film, which was told from a male perspective, and now told the story through the female perspective and the female characters. It's a great movie. It is starring Nicole Kidman, who's fantastic, Kirsten Dunst, Colin Farrell, Ella Fanning. It takes place during the Civil War, 1864, in Virginia. And basically, we have a soldier who has been left in the woods and is taken to this house. And you kind of see how he adapts and the women adapt to having this one male around.
I saw the trailer. It looks very weird and creepy.
that is the marketing campaign. And there definitely are weird and creepy moments to it. But to me, it's about how these women, you know, as opposed to the 7 version, it's about now how these women are coming together against this adversity that has infiltrated their home. And it's a story of growth and reconciliation amongst the group of women. So I really enjoyed it.
Did you see it yet, Kieran?
Yes, I did. And in fact, it is playing up at the Evening Star and it's doing
great.
Well. You know, I wanted to go back to a little bit of what Claire just said. She's talking about these mid-range films, and I agree with her. There are some really good films out there, and they are these mid-range films, and I have been advocating that we should be making these, you know, $25 to $50 million films, and that there's a huge market out there, and it gives, and you don't have to waste, you know, $100 million just on, you know, publicity to get a $100 million film to make money. So I agree with that. However, there's a dark side to this, because you take a film that's coming out right soon that's getting tons of advice or tons of, you know, critical acclaim, called The Big Sick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be huge, but it's going to the big houses. It's going to the mainstream first-run houses. That's a film that normally would go to a smaller independent theater because it's an independent thing. It's an independent film. So these smaller independent theaters are being frozen out in some regard. And at the same time, you take see what's happening with Netflix and Amazon and how they are impacting the independent market. There is a film called The Exception, which was supposed to go direct to video and direct onto, I think it was Netflix. It's an A24 film. A24 is a distributor. But they wanted to release it out to movie theaters, but they gave no one no notice, so it kind of died on the vine. But there are films, you know, that Netflix is coming out, like To the Bone, Icarus, and Okja, which just came out, that would normally go to independent or smaller theaters, and they're not going. So there's a product drain for these small independent theaters, and that, to me, does not bode well.
Well, The Big Sick is an amazing movie. Camille Nanjami, who you guys probably know from Silicon Valley, this is based on his marriage and his, you know, basically how him and his wife came together. But I wouldn't necessarily say it's an independent, although it was independently conceived by him, because it's put out by Amazon Studios. So, and it's Judd Apatow. So it doesn't fall for me under the quote unquote independent title, just because it is a studio picture. So although I do understand that it would be a good art house film, and perhaps they should work a deal with Amazon or Netflix, like you're saying, that would be that would make sense to me, since that content usually is less commercial. It still is. It's a studio movie.
I'm not quite willing to call Amazon a studio just yet. I mean, it's run by Bob Burney. Bob Burney came out of the art house market. He's doing an excellent job of taking their films and giving it to certain distributors. So they're making the films and then selecting the distributor they feel is best to be able to market their film. And I think he's being very, very sharp about that. But I do not consider, do you consider Amazon in the vein of Lionsgate, or do you feel they're in the vein of, say, Columbia or Sony or Warner Brothers or Paramount?
I don't think that studio means you have to produce a certain budget. I mean, it means there's a certain amount of clout and resources behind the name. You know, to me, a studio could produce a $10 million movie or a $200 million movie, but if they have the resources and the affiliations and business relationships, then that film has different things to pull from in order to get distribution, versus a film that is made by someone, you know, who is truly an independent filmmaker, and they create their product and then go to sell it, which is what we see at, you know, the Angelica or film theaters like that, the indie film theaters you're talking about, I believe.
Guess what? We have to take a break. When we come back, comments and questions from the audience, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. The email address talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We haven't even talked yet about several of the movies making headlines, Baby Driver, for example, or Stephen King's Dark Tower. So we'll talk about those when we come back. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Ocean View at Falmouth, proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow, beginning at 1 p.m. on Maine Public Classical.
What if an ordinary bag of potato chips could listen to every word you said? Does it work with Doritos?
I suspect so.
Lay's, I'm assuming, will work fine?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm Guy Raz. What potato chips tell us about the hidden secrets all around us? Next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Join us for the TED Radio Hour coming up tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock and Wednesday evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio. This September, Maine Public will be airing The Vietnam War, the new Ken Burns 18-hour documentary. We are planning a series of partial pre-screenings across Maine, and in preparation for these events, we're looking for Vietnam veterans or anyone who is afflicted by the conflict who are willing to share their story on the Vietnam War, and also any correspondence they may have had during that time. We'll archive these submissions on our website, and a few will be recorded for broadcast. If you're interested or know somebody who is, please send your testimonials and stories to mystory@mainpublic.org. And thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Summer Movies. On the line with us, Garen Daly, an award-winning film critic, programmer, and consultant. He's founder of the Boston Sci-Fi Film Festival and the creative consultant for the Evening Star Cinema in Brunswick. Claire Kramer is with us as well. She's a producer, actress, and co-founder of the website Geek Nation. She also hosts the podcast Take Five with Claire Kramer. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll start with Elaine, who's calling from Sedgwick. Hi, Elaine. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Yes, I'm afraid I want to bring the conversation back to Wonder Woman briefly here, because I think that to put an entire show to it, I think it's a real cultural phenomenon. I've been talking about it with women I know, and all of our minds are literally blown by the fact that there's this,
Oh, gosh, Elaine, you're breaking up. Can you walk to a place where you have better better service?
I can try. Okay. I just wanted to say that my women friends are all talking about this movie. Can you hear me now?
I can. And what are they saying? What is the conversation among your friends? And do you mind if I ask what generation you consider yourself in?
We are middle-aged women, 40s and 50s. And our minds are literally blown by the fact that this woman is not, she's never in danger. She plows through all the bad guys in this movie. And it's, you know what? I didn't even think it was a great movie. I watch action movies. It was a good action movie. But it's phenomenal because of this character. And I can't wait to see where they go with what are obviously going to be sequels. You know they're going to be sequels to this movie. And I just think you could even devote an entire show to it. And that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Elaine. Claire, thoughts?
Yeah, no, Elaine, I'm with you. I absolutely love, she does not rely on anyone else and in fact has no problem speaking her mind when she's at the council. And you know, she holds a moral code to herself and to everyone she comes in contact with. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, she is someone, obviously we're going to see her in the DC universe for a long time. And I think she made a huge impact with this movie. It was done very well.
And Garen, it strikes me that having a female protagonist like this may not be unusual in mainstream films, but it sure is not unusual in the science fiction world, is it?
No, it's not unusual at all. And I wanted to go back to something that Elaine said about it being, you know, a kind of a cultural phenomenon. She is talking about her generation being in the 50s. I have two wonderful women working with me, Leandra and Miriam. They're both in their late 20s, early 30s. They were incredibly excited about seeing such a strong female character on screen. And they just really went nuts about it. But you're right. In science fiction, there are a lot of great, you know, female characters that are strong. I mean, you take a look at the original Alien as a perfect example of it, where Sigourney Weaver is the person that triumphs at the end. So it's good to see that, you know, we're starting to really recognize the power that women have.
All right, let's talk about Baby Driver. Our deputy news director, Susan Sharon, believes it is the best movie she's seen in a long time, and she can't wait to see it again. I've also noticed that its soundtrack is the number one album, would you call it an album, on iTunes. It's number one on iTunes. Claire, what do you think of Baby Driver?
Oh, I absolutely loved Baby Driver. It was everything I wanted in a film. And I'm an Edgar Wright fan. And so I knew going in, I was going to have my expectations at a certain level. It exceeded everything. The opening sequence is phenomenal. First of all, you have this kid, you know, singing a song behind his car, and you see this robbery happen. And there's this high-speed action sequence, which was done amazingly well. And then you see him get out of his car and walking down the street, and you see how he interacts with objects, and it sort of, and the music plays almost a secondary character, and it sets the tonality for the whole movie. I thought it was phenomenal. It was extremely well done in terms of action. All the action sequences were just top of the chart. It was well done in terms of a love story. It progressed from one movie where at the beginning it sort of reminded me of what James Gunn did with Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, in terms of music, where it was incorporating the music. And then it kind of takes this shift and the movie becomes more action-based, soul-searching, love story. And then, of course, it has a very climactic ending, which I will not spoil for those who have not seen it. But it was phenomenal. And like I said, I'm a big Edgar Wright fan. And, you know, after the Cornetto trilogy and him pulling out of Ant-Man, I was wondering what was going to be next for him. This was it, and it exceeded all my expectations. I loved it.
Garen Daly, Ansel Elgort's getting a lot of buzz. People are comparing him to James Dean, Steve McQueen. What do you think?
Well, I think he was a surprise. I wanted to go back to a little bit what Claire said. I, too, am a really big Edgar Wright fan. And what I love is when you start deconstructing the actual making of the movie, he edited the film to the music, and you can see the edits and the music going hand in hand, and it's massively done. So yeah, Baby Driver is a great film, and again, it's a smaller film that was not expected to do a lot of money, and it's exceeded what it's going to do, and it's going to continue because the word of mouth is so strong in this film that it's going to be one of the surprise hits of the summer of 2017.
Okay, so what do you think, Garen, of The Dark Tower?
I don't know about this film enough to really, I mean, it hasn't come out yet, so I haven't seen it. I'm looking forward to it. I'm hoping it's going to be good. Again, I'm hoping that the end of the summer is going to be very, very strong. But it's based on the Stephen King. It's one of his more popular stories. And again, I hope that it's going to be executed well and that it's going to have good legs or runs long time in the theaters because they could use it.
One would think, Claire, with Stephen King and Matthew McConaughey involved, you can't go wrong, can you?
Well, I'm a big Stephen King fan. I read all his stuff when I was younger and continue to do so. And the screenplay was actually written by Akiva Goldsman, who wrote The Da Vinci Code, which I am also a huge fan of, and that screenplay. So yeah, I have high expectations for it. I'm excited. I have not seen it yet. As Garen said, it has not come out yet. I think it debuts August 4th, if I remember correctly. And it will, of course, have a wide release put out by Sony Pictures. I'm very excited. It's going to be a genre film, sci-fi, fantasy, Western, horror. It's going to have a little bit of everything for people who like that genre. And of course, Stephen King fans. And Ron Howard directs. So why not? I love Ron Howard.
I didn't know Ron Howard directing it. I watched the trailer, though, and it does look enticing. We're going to go to John calling from Bridgeton. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Good afternoon. This is a little off your subject, but this film festival happens in the fall. It's called Manhattan Short, and it's a group of 10, 15-minute or less short movies that are shown around the world at the same week every year. And I find it very interesting. There's all kinds of different films. It's in various different languages, but there's always subtitles. And I think your listeners might enjoy going to that.
Great. And do they show that in Bridgeton?
Not yet. But we usually can see it in Portland. I've seen it up in Brunswick, I believe it was, the first time.
Okay, Garen, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I am familiar with it. And this is an area where film festivals like the Manhattan Short Film Festival and film festivals in general are doing a really good job, because what they're doing is they're bringing in all these young filmmakers, because a lot of filmmakers can't afford or don't have the money to be able to make a full-length feature, even if it's only $100,000 or $200,000. So what they're doing is they're making these really creative, really smart short films. And again, the quality of the storytelling, the quality of the filmmaking is just really up there. So, there are lots of shorts out there. I highly recommend people. Not only is there the Manhattan Film Festival, but around Oscar time, the Oscar shorts go around out on circuit as well to most of the art houses. And again, if you go to a film festival in your local neighborhood, and just about every local neighborhood has a film festival these days, they should have a collection of shorts, and I would recommend people to go to them. This is all part of when the means of the production goes into the hands of the people. Now that it's so cheap to make a film, people who have an idea and a good camera can go out and actually make these films. And it really does bode very, very well for the entire industry.
I'll go to Steve, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
I'd watch any movie where the song on the soundtrack came from Bridge Over Troubled Water. I told my daughters, and they're like, no, it can't be. And I said, yeah, it can. It is. So, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think it's phenomenal that a song almost as old as me is in a movie in 2017.
Well, Steve, get ready for The Only Living Boy in New York, which is coming out directed by Mark Webb with Kate Beckinsale, Pierce Brosnan, and Callum Turner. So there's another song for you.
Another Simon and Garfunkel song?
Another Simon and Garfunkel song being turned into a movie.
Awesome, Steve. Thank you. We're going to go to Will, who's calling from Cornish. Hi, Will. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you for having me. I didn't get to hear the reviews on Wonder Woman, and I haven't been able to see it, but it's encouraging that it's getting great response. I just wanted to follow up on the comments about Independent Woman. Back in the 60s, when I was a teenager, I watched The Avengers and was absolutely smitten with Emma Peel, who is Diana Rigg. And I just remember sometime in that time just hearing that she was the first independent woman to have a major role on TV. In other words, anyone familiar with the program, she knew jujitsu, and she had as many adventures as the male character. So I just wanted to say it's been around a while. We kind of forget.
Thanks, Will. Claire, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, Emma Peel, she obviously is a fictional character. She was a spy in the 60s and on the series The Avengers. Yeah, she set the tone, definitely. I think what we've seen since then is the female protagonist developing outside of the male context. So no longer are the male characters used to tell the story of the female, but the female is actually telling her own story. I would say that's been the development since, the Emma Peel days. And that's very evident in Wonder Woman. So I encourage you to go see it, Wonder Woman. I think you'll like it.
Will, thanks so much for your call. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Have you seen one of the summer movies yet this summer? What did you think of it? And let us know what you're looking forward to seeing. This is Maine Calling.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Patriot Subaru, providing sales, service, and accessories on new and pre-owned all-wheel drive Subarus on Route 1 in Saco.
Many police who shoot and kill people carry heavy emotional baggage.
This one round in my community that just like shattered everything I thought my law enforcement career would be, and then feel like you ruined a family.
But could more training in de-escalation tactics help to prevent many shootings? On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll take a closer look. And we'll explore the New England landscape through the eyes of painter Marsden Hartley. Join us.
That's Next, coming up at 2 o'clock this afternoon, here on Maine Public Radio.
Hello, I'm Linda Hunt. Just why do teens take so many risks? Are they rebellious, crazy, or is there a neurological explanation? Dr. Francis Jensen will talk about the neuroscience behind the teenage brain with host Adam Savage. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
Join us for City Arts and Lectures coming up at 2 o'clock on Monday.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, which summer blockbusters are worth your hard-earned dollars? On the line with us today, Claire Kramer, actress, producer, and founder of Geek Nation, Garen Daly, award-winning film critic, creative consultant for the Evening Star Cinema in Brunswick. Both of my guests have a lot more on their resume, but I'm running out of time, so I'm going to ask you to join the conversation. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We haven't even talked yet, Garen, about Dunkirk, which is what I know my husband and son will want to see. Have you had a chance to see that? Have you seen any previews? It hasn't hit theaters in Maine yet, has it?
No, it has not hit theaters, and I think they have a pretty close wraps at this point. But listen, you know, this is Christopher Nolan, who did the Batman, and he's done some great films in the past. What's really interesting for me about this is that it was shot and it's going to be screened in over 100 screens across the country in 70 millimeter. And it's going to be the widest release 70-millimeter film in about 40 years.
Explain to us, those of us who aren't movie buffs, what that means, or not experts.
Well, in the old days, all film was on film, and it was gauged, you know, starting with 8-millimeter, 16-millimeter. Most movie theaters were 35-millimeter. 70-millimeter came to fore in the 50s when there was the competition from TV. So 70-millimeter is a great format for epic films, Lawrence of Arabia, those kinds of films. So Dunkirk has that pedigree with its 70-millimeter. And what's happened in the past 15 to 20 years, everyone has shifted away from film, away from 35-millimeter to digital. And now we're going back and we're starting to see, not unlike LPs, that people are making films in film, and this is the first one in a couple of years where it's going to be 70-millimeter, and it's going to be awesome. It's a great experience in the movie theater.
Claire, what hasn't come out yet that you're really excited for?
Well, I'm also very excited for Dunkirk. I mean, I'm a huge Christopher Nolan fan, and you say Batman, I say Inception. That is probably one of my all-time favorite movies. And Dunkirk, I mean, I'm also a war fanatic. So this is Dunkirk, of course, refers to the beach where the premise of the movie takes place as they evacuate troops. And I won't say too much because I don't even know how much I agree with you, Garen. They've kept this movie pretty much under wraps.
But you know what I'm hoping, Claire? I'm hoping that this is going to be about all the little people, all the common people that went and rescued all those soldiers. That's what I'm hoping that the film is going to be about.
I agree with you. That would be an interesting take on it. I'm guessing, as it's Christopher Nolan, that it's going to be also some alternate timeline that is taking place in those little people's heads. I'm hoping, you know, there's some sort of Nolan-esque take on it. You mentioned this coming out on film, and I just want to mention also The Beguiled was shot and released on 35-millimeter, which was also exciting and added to the look of that film, if you see it. Jennifer, could you ask me one more time, what am I looking forward to? Is that what
you asked? Yeah, what else are you looking forward to? Because the summer movie season isn't over. We're about halfway through.
It is not over. There's so many good films coming out. I do want to call back for a second to The Big Sick, which we talked about distribution for that, but we didn't necessarily talk about the movie. And I just want to give it a quick shout out.
Sure.
Because Camille Dunjami, who, of course, wrote and directed, well, actually, he didn't direct, Michael Showalter directed, but he wrote this movie with his wife, and it is based on her as they were dating early on, and they actually broke up, and she got very ill, and he spent time while she was in a coma with her parents nursing her back to health. And this is the quintessential love story, and I think it's something that everyone in Generation X can relate to, and I really recommend people go see it. Holly Hunter, Ray Romano are also in it. They're amazing. And it's just a great, great, great little film. So I definitely wanted to put that out there. People should see that.
And do you agree, Garen?
I think Big Sick is definitely a film that people could see. And I also agree with Claire that, you know, the season is going to be it really seems to be backloaded. I mean, I'm looking at my list here, and it's like there are 10 films I want to see. Okay. There's Ingrid Goes West, which is Aubrey Plaza. There's Patty Cakes. There's Lady Macbeth, which is not Shakespeare. There's Detroit, which is directed by Kathryn Bigelow. Anything with Kathryn Bigelow, mm-hmm. I'm there. There's also Atomic Blonde with Charlize Theron, Landline with Jenny Slate. You know, there's also The Little Hours based on the Decameron. Beatrice at Dinner, which is out there right now. There are, and let's not forget, War of the Planet of the Apes. I mean, which is going to be a huge blockbuster, and Spider-Man. I mean, they're all films that I want to see.
And
yes,
not here in New England, but all over the country, we've had blistering hot weather. One would think that people are going to be going to theaters or have been going to theaters. I'm so surprised that we're down 8%.
Well, again, part of it is the quality of the films. And the other piece is that when, as a former exhibitor, the heat does not really have an effect until you get into the end of July and August, when people are done doing everything outside, and then they start going inside to the air conditioning.
Jennifer, you mentioned The Little Hours. This one is actually out already. It's a great little indie film, and it's entertaining, but I wouldn't say it's fantastic. This is a movie that really tries to take the Monty Python model of making films and apply it with American actors and the American sensibility. And it's just not quite as well done as the traditional, like, you know, The Life of Brian or The Holy Grail. But it is a fun movie. Molly Shannon, John C. Reilly are in it. They are completely underused. But I would say if you have a little time on your hands, it's worth seeing. It to me, this is more an indie film than something like The Big Sick.
Okay, The Little Hours. We're going to go to York and Torbert. Hi, Torbert. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hello, Jennifer. I'd like to sneak in a couple of small films about everyday people in this blockbuster discussion. Those films are Megan Levy, about a female dog handler in the war scene in the Middle East. I think it rises to the level of great art through attention to small detail. And the other one is Ken Loach's I, Daniel Blake, which is there's a dry eye in the theater after spending a couple of hours with this noble, simple man. I'd be surprised.
And, Torbert, where did you see these? Where did you see them?
We have a great little system in southern Maine. We go to New Hampshire, where Portsmouth has the Music Hall and the Loft, and they're able to show lesser-run films of higher quality. But Railroad Square should catch them, and maybe some of the other small theaters around the state.
Garen, do you know, are they going to get shown in Brunswick?
They may get shown in Brunswick. The problem with Brunswick is that it's a single screen, and as a single screen, it becomes it's much more difficult to be able to play as many films as you want and do audience development. The owner there has been struggling for several years trying to find a location to be able to put 4 to 5 screens, because the market definitely dictates that we could easily do 4 to 5 screens there. But again, it's difficult. The climate is not really strong enough in Brunswick area for people to help support the development of a 4-screen complex. But It's there. And, you know, Torbert is right. Megan Levy and I, Daniel Blake, are excellent films. And there are other smaller films that are out there that we would love to see, too. One of them being Step, which is going to be the feel-good documentary of the season. It's all about young women in inner-city Baltimore learning how to dance and using dance to be a vehicle to help themselves get through life. So there's a lot of little films out there that we would like to see.
We have a related email. This email asks, is there even an independent art house movie scene left in Maine? Trainspotting 2 came out this year, and despite hunting far and wide for several months, the only place I could find that showed it was Railroad Square Cinema in Waterville. And even there, it was a brief run I couldn't make it to. Why do so many cinemas show the same dozen movies? This is from Ian in Poland.
Do you want me to take that question?
Yes.
It's part of what's going on in the business. And again, part of it has to do with the number of screens, who's distributing the film, what kind of budget is out there, and what kind of availability. So some of these films, Trainspotting 2, did not do very well at the box office. And so when you're looking at someplace like The Evening Star or some of these other art houses in Maine, you're looking at whether or not it could sustain itself for a week. And if you try and split it up or do something creative with it, the distributor is usually saying no because they know that they have another market, an aftermarket, after theaters. So that's one of the reasons. There's other reasons as well, and it's complex. It's a complex industry. I could probably spend an hour talking about what the problem is.
Well, we'll squeeze in one more call, then we'll go to David in Biddeford. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Hi. Nice to speak to you guys. I'll take my answer off the air, but I just wanted to recommend a wonderful little film currently on Netflix called Life and Future. So it's sort of musically based and very, very enjoyable for a family evening.
Okay. You said Future Folk?
Life of Future Folk.
Okay.
Like folk music.
Okay, thanks for the recommendation. Claire, Garen, either of you familiar with this?
I actually did the New England premiere at the Boston Science Fiction Film Festival. So, yes, it's one of these wonderful little independent films out of New York City that doesn't necessarily get a chance to play in movie theaters except in film festivals. But, again, one of the reasons why Netflix is so good and why Amazon is good is they do give that aftermarket ability for a film to find an audience. And that's to their credit.
Claire, before we go, we want to ask you about projects you're working on right now. Where can we see you right now if we want to see you on the bigger little screen? And what can we expect soon?
Well, if you would like to see me acting this month, you can flip over to Lifetime. I have a movie playing there called The Wrong House. And I just directed my first documentary feature, which is called Joyrider. It's about wheelchair athlete Andre Kylik. We have a great Facebook page that will keep everyone up to date. It's just called Joyrider on Facebook. And you can always follow me on Twitter, Claire Kramer, and Instagram, Claire Kramer Official, to see my behind the scenes life.
Great. And Garen, tell us what's coming up at Evening Star that people ought to be excited about this summer.
There's a wonderful little film starring Sam Elliott called The Hero. It's a story about an aging star who had one hit. He's got cancer, and he's just still living off that one hit, and he's trying to reconcile with his daughter. It's a wonderful film and a great film for somebody who's been one of the great character actors and, without a doubt, the best mustache in Hollywood history.
All right. And how do you decide what needs to come to – you were talking a little bit about how complicated it is with one screen. How far ahead of time do you need to figure this out, and how nimble are you if a film is – you know, really doing great or not so much?
Well, you're nimble. I mean, everything is on a week-to-week basis. But you try and plan out months in advance, and you come up with all sorts of different kinds of plans and what works and what doesn't work. But ultimately, when you look at it, it's all about how well it does in other places, and then we can translate that into how it does in Maine. But like I said, if anyone is interested, Evening Star in Brunswick could really use a four-screen theater. And, you know, if there are people out there who have money and want to see it happen, you can get in touch with me, Garen Daly, at Gmail, and I can help you. So.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. Garen Daly, award-winning film critic, programmer, and consultant. He's the founder of the Boston Science Fiction Film Festival and the creative consultant for the Evening Star Cinema in Brunswick, Maine. Claire Kramer is an actress and producer and co-founder of Geek Nation. She hosts the podcast Take Five with Claire Kramer, and she just finished directing her first feature documentary about wheelchair athlete Andre Kalik. Thank you both for being here. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Cindy Hahn and Jonathan Smith. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.